What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Welcome back. Gavin Riley with you on the record this Sunday lunchtime on News Talk. 53106 for your texts on the record NT, our hashtag on Twitter. Now, this week, an old ferry ship began slowly to capsize on Grand Canal Dock in Dublin. It's a ship that you might have seen actually there if you've been wandering around that part of town for the last couple of years. But it is not a ship which is usually associated, oddly enough, with Grand Canal Dock. It is a ship and a story more primarily associated with one of the Aran Islands. Now, many listeners might even remember some time spent on this ferry, the Nave Aina, in their own youths. It was the ferry that brought people to and from the Aran Islands back in the day. But what to do with the ship, which had been earmarked for, among other things, a hotel? And Donald Fallon has back from his European sojourn. We'll ask more about your Ryanair mishaps maybe in a couple of minutes to tell us all about it. Good to have you back, though. Donald, perhaps more chat about the islands off the Irish coast at present and than there has been for a long time before.
Yeah, the world is talking about the beautiful islands that dot our coast in recent weeks. And look, who imagined a time when a film set on Mayo's beautiful Achill Island would scoop so many Academy Award nominations. And I know Irish people are kind of divided over the film, but we all agree on one thing. The landscape is incredibly beautiful. But I think a reminder of our relationship with the islands, and more particularly the Aran Islands off the coast of Galway, made headlines for all the wrong reasons this week, because the Nave Aina is slowly losing its battle for survival. Or look, so it seems.
Or so it seems, yeah.
And for anyone who's been down to Grand Canal Dock in recent years, it's been a kind of curious thing to look at because it's been retired since the late 1980s.
So it's not in the end of the Grand Canal Dock that most people will be familiar with. So it's not down at the theatre side of things or down at the Google end of things. It's down at the far end.
Yeah, but as you're standing kind of at the Grand Canal Theatre and the beautiful art installation there, you know, the kind of the red bolts out of the ground, and you're looking towards Ringsend, you can see it down there. And look, it's been retired since the 80s. Everything's been proposed for this thing. A floating hotel, a historical exhibit in Galway. None of that came to pass. And now, you know, in the words of the Irish Times this week, it's kind of a ghost ship, which is a great way of describing
yeah.
it. And the emotional connection to the Nave Aina is very real. I mean, there's a Facebook group called The Days of the MV Nave Aina, more than 45,000 followers on that group. So for many people, this was an important part, if you will, of their own childhood, of their own growing up. And it's been just slowly decaying down there in the Grand Canal.
So this ferry, although it primarily served Galway, of course, in the Aran Islands, actually built in Dublin and one of the last few ships to be able to claim that title.
And it's really interesting that we find ourselves talking about this now, because the last slot we did was about the Doors into Docklands Act, which had just launched, and this new focus on the history of Dublin's Docklands. So that there is this very surprising Docklands history in Dublin, and many people might be surprised to hear that, you know, we built ships and ferries in Dublin, including this one. So the Nave Aina, it's in this weird position. It was built in the Liffey Dockyards in the 1950s, but where it is now, it's minutes from kind of Barrow Street, which is the home of Google. You know, it's right alongside kind of new offices and buildings of the modern age, Silicon Docks, as they call it. So you have this reminder of a different Dublin Docklands, if you will, sitting there against the new. And that juxtaposition is really interesting. But she was one of the last ever ships to be constructed in Dublin's Docklands. So she may not have served the people of Dublin. I mean, she's synonymous with the Aran Islands on one level, but she was built not far from where she sits and where she sinks today.
Although she might well have been serving quite a lot of Dubliners, given the life that she had, depending on how many of them were heading out west for a Colossus era. When it launched in the 1950s, Aina was seen as being very vital for the islands, but also for tourism in that part of the world.
Yeah, Sean Lamass had a great line when it was launched. Sean Lamass spoke of his belief that tourists, cattle pigs, film stars and millionaires would be amongst its passenger list.
Gypsies, tramps and thieves of the 1950s.
That's kind of not unlike today, actually, because, you know, we're talking a lot about the Academy Award nominations of the last week. But in the 1950s, of course, John Ford's masterpiece, The Quiet Man, had been released. So there was this international interest in getting to, you know, more remote parts of rural Ireland. And I think the hope of the state was that the Nave Aina would ferry not just the people of the Aran Islands, but the visitors of the Aran Islands forward and back. And it was extraordinarily loyal, you know, despite the Irish weather. I mean, you know, the classical Latin for Ireland, the land of constant winter.
Yeah.
In the 1990s...
People forget sometimes that's literally what Hibernia means. Hibernia being the Roman summer, the season of winter.
Yeah.
So they literally named us after the fact that our weather was crap.
Bears go hibernating thing, but we are Hibernia. And in the 1990s, RTE did this beautiful report on the Nave Aina, and they reported that in 30 years of service, this is extraordinary, the ship only missed seven scheduled sailings.
Seven?
Seven in 30 years. Which is just amazing. God. So I don't want to imagine how rough some of those, some of those sailings were, but it went in literally all weather conditions. So some very, very rocky journeys. But I mean, I think at that point, you can't overemphasize that point. I think visitors overwhelmingly, you know, they weren't the American with a romantic vision of the islands that Sean Lamass might have had in his head. They're mostly kind of, as well as the people themselves of the islands, obviously, urban and suburban Irish teenagers.
Yeah.
And when I posted about it during the week on Instagram, one friend's memories were actually getting sick off the side of the Nave Aina as he made his way out to improve his cupola focal as a teenager.
I was about to suggest that if it had only missed seven journeys in 30 years of service, that it was more than just the Atlantic that it was sailing through. There was a fair amount of yeah. bodily regurgitations that it was trying to wade through as well. Three Castles Burning is Donald's handle on Twitter, or on Instagram rather, if you want to follow up on all of that. The Nave Aina pops up in literature, and given how central it was to the life of people getting around in that part of the world, it's also in a lot of 20th century Irish memoirs.
Yeah, it was in service for more than three decades, so any good memoir that involves the islands, it's in there. Tim Pat Coogan, in his memoir, he talks about how he'd totally fallen in love with the idea of the Aran Islands before he'd even got to them. And he has this lovely line about, you know, how it seemed like a semi-tropical paradise of blazing white beaches where fish were so numerous that they hurled themselves into the islanders' canvas canoes known as currachs. But look, the Nave Aina, he recalls...
Sounds a little bit Caribbean there, that kind of description, doesn't it?
I don't know if Tim Pat found what he wanted on the islands, but the Nave Aina, Tim Pat remembers, was the journey just long enough to create seasickness, but not a real sense of remoteness, which is a nice diplomatic way of putting it. But I mean, in a time before the Nave Aina, how did you get out to the islands? I mean, you find that in memoirs as well, the Curragh, the famous Curragh. And that was an experience that never really left people. You know, it was one thing to sail on a ferry in bad weather conditions. It was a different thing to get yourself over in a Curragh. And J.M. Singh, you know, who was convinced by W.B. Yeats in Paris to go to the Aran Islands and to write about them.
Convinced to leave Paris to go to the Aran Islands.
Yeah.
Like, I've been to Inishman. Inishman is lovely, and you can go and see Cathair Singh there, and it's nice, and you can understand the serenity of it all. But being convinced to leave Paris for Inishman.
Yeah, like everyone went to Paris to find what they wanted. You know, Joyce did it, Yeats did it, Singh did it. But
and he discovered when he went to Paris that what he wanted was actually total isolation.
Kind of recognised that Singh was in the wrong place, and he said something to the effect of, you must go to Aran. And thankfully Singh did, and he went out there on a Curragh, and the way he describes it is just amazing. Down in this shallow trough of canvas that bent and trembled with the motion of the men, I had a far more intimate feeling of the glory and power of the waves than I'd ever known in a steamer, which is fantastic, isn't
Fair,
it?
Yeah.
But look, on occasion, lives were lost in the Curraghs. It was a dangerous way of travelling. I think the ferries represented a kind of a great improvement, if you will, in getting to and from the islands.
And that despite only missing seven sailings in 30 years. Remarkable. The big question throughout the 20th century, though, is I think
my local bus doesn't show up seven times a day. You know?
it's one of those ghost buses they've been telling us about. So throughout the 20th century, you have this whole question of how to make the islands more connected to each other, but also to the mainland, but also trying to kind of retain that character where you don't want them to feel like they are the mainland, but you don't want them to feel totally isolated either. And if the Nave Aina and the ferries represented a leap forward from the Currachs, it was inevitable then that some other technology would come across along in time and get rid of the Nave Aina as well.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, one of the weird things about the Aran Islands is that people go there. People, you know, urbanites go to the Aran Islands because they want something different. They want that sense of being removed from the mainland, that otherness. But people who live on the islands and who knew them as home, they had a desire for the very opposite. You know, what they wanted was greater connectivity with the Irish mainland for all kinds of reasons, communication, health, all kinds of reasons. So there's this clash, if you will, between those who seek the remoteness of the islands and those who want greater connectivity. So in post-independence Ireland, there are all these questions around the sustainability of island living. And some of the islands, interestingly, they're literally evacuated. So probably most famously, the Blaskets off the coast of Kerry, home to Peg Sayers, and which had kind of long attracted academic interest too. But German Ferreter wrote a lovely history of the islands in general off the coast. He kind of goes through how the various islands fared in a new independent state. Inishturk, for example, off the coast of Mayo, he tells us, by the late 60s, there were seven families on the island, six of whom wanted to leave it and move to the mainland. Turbot had 16 families, 12 of whom wanted to leave it. So there was this, I suppose, by the middle of the 20th century onwards, this belief that maybe we have to give up on the islands. But I think for the Aran Islands, a couple of things went right there. One, air travel. totally transformed connectivity and tourism. Just made it a lot easier to get there, and to get there a lot quicker. And by the late 80s, the Navé and his days were pretty much over. So there were new and improved ferries, but there was also air travel that really revolutionised how we engaged with the Aran Islands.
Could you imagine being the one family in Inishturk that decided not to leave? Well, like, could you just imagine, like, because it must have surely have been a very visceral debate for all of those families as well. If they're deciding, right, is there a future for this island? Is this a place that people can continue to live? And if everyone else has decided, I can't live here anymore, that the consequences, that what you lose, what you sacrifice is too great, and there's one family that says no. And like, I mean, the community must have been small and knit enough anyway. Yeah. The idea that like one family decided to hold out, and the same in Turbat as well, just must have been a remarkable time to live through, and for some of those debates to have happened. So from the late 1980s then, the question has been the same. What to do with Navaina?
Yeah, the Irish Nautical Trust acquired her, and they moved her to the Grand Canal Dock in Dublin in time. And then, yeah, what do we do? And at one point, there was a surfing shop within her, which was kind of interesting. Then they sold it to Samfield Corbett from the Irish Ship and Barge Fabrication Company for €1.
Wow.
In 2015. This is your problem now, you know.
Yeah.
But Sam, in fairness, I mean, he was interviewed in the Irish Times this week, and he was very, very honest about it, the various barriers that they faced. He wanted to turn it into a hotel, and when the pandemic hit, that just became an impossibility. So, yeah. I mean, if that idea sounds a bit mad, I would say to people, think about the MV Killarney, which is just minutes away from the Navé, and it's by the convention centre. That's done really, really well as a floating kind of bar and restaurant. So there is the possibility of putting new life into these things, but everything just seemed to go against Sam. And what seemed like a good investment for €1 in 2015 has probably become something of a serious headache.
Yeah, if you were able to get through the various regulatory hurdles to sort of make it work, then it would have been a fabulous investment. But of course, if you can't, then it's a very large thing to be left lumbered with. Is the question then put to bed now, if Aina is now returning to her watery grave off the Grand Canal Dock, is it put to bed, or is this in any way still kind of salvageable?
Look, I mean, a floating Liffey Hotel and Aran Islands tourist attraction, maybe the idea of bringing her back to the Aran Islands, that was a beautiful idea. A piece of a maritime quarter in Dublin, nobody really knew what to do with her. And the enemy of preservationists and historians is time. You know, if you spend long enough debating something, time will ultimately win. And I worry about that happening in other things, for example, on Moor Street. So if you wait, things decay. And that doesn't mean that parts of the Navaina can't be saved. And certainly, I think if there's a future Docklands Museum, it would be interesting to see a part of her on display. I mean, this is a ship that was made in Dublin. Mm. Likewise, Galway, I think, has a very, very strong claim emotionally,
absolutely,
to having a part of the Navaina in its own museum too. But, you know, Glenn Murphy in the Irish Times during the week, he had a lovely line. He said, the ship's future remains in a watery limbo. So perhaps we'll leave on those words, watery limbo.
You can certainly imagine if there was to be a maritime museum in Galway or something, that it's certainly something that would have a home there. Or even if there was to be a home or any kind of exhibit on the islands themselves for the history of how they've been connected to the mainland, there ought to be a place for it. But the Navaina, about perhaps to visit Davy Jones's locker.
Yeah, that's a lovely... Just to say, that's a really, really lovely piece by Glenn Murphy in the Irish Times.
Yeah, I'll tweet the link to it in a couple of minutes' time once we're out of the studio. Donald Fallon, as we mentioned, is on Instagram, Three Castles Burning. He's the author of Three Castles Burning, A History of Dublin in 12 Seats, the Easton's Book of the Year for 2022, which is no pressure then, because it's only 11 months till the next one gets crowned, and Donald is surely going to have to try and retain that crown one way or another. Three Castles Burning is also the name of Donald's podcast about the history of our capital city, which you'll find anywhere you get your audio online. And the author of plenty of other books as well, too many to mention in the limited time we have left, because that is all the time that we have available to you on today's show. Big thank you to the production team led today by Aoife Breen, also featuring Hugo De Silva, Scotland Sound, and the help of John Byrne. We are back next Sunday morning, as always, at 11 o'clock. Until then, from me, Gavin Riley, and all the team, thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.